Parshas Vayeshev, it always comes around Hanukkah time, and the Hanukkah Parshiot are always run around Vayeshev, Miketz, and Vayigash, which means that we're always talking about the Joseph story. The truth of the matter is that it's appropriate that way, because what was there, if there was one thing, there people saw a lot of comparisons between the Joseph story and the story of the Chashmonaim. What connection could there possibly be? This was Egyptians and this was Greeks, this was this and this was that. Because there's one thing missing in the Joseph story, and that is, who's not mentioned in the whole story? God's name is not meant, God does not interfere directly into the story. He doesn't appear through most of the story. He's there, okay? I mean, he's mentioned by Yosef, but that's it. It's a time of what they call Hester Panim. It's a time when God's obvious presence in history is not there. Okay, you have to believe. It's a time for belief. Same thing with the time with regard to Hanukkah. The miracles of Hanukkah were all what's called Nisim Nistarim. I mean, you know, the difference in a Nes Nistar and a Nes Nigla is that if you take a look at the splitting of the Red Sea, that's a real Cecil B. DeMille moment. That's George Lucas. That's special effects. I just learned a new word, CGI. You know what CGI is? Computer generated imagery. I just finished a novel last night by Herman Wu called The Lawgiver, in which I learned all kinds of stuff like that. Anyways, it's the stuff that you can't miss it. It's a miracle, guys. Okay, huge sea splits. Nothing. There's no way to describe it otherwise. However, then there are other kinds of nisim. There are nisim nistarim, hidden miracles. Hidden miracles, by and large, are miracles where it's possible to explain the miracle in human terms. It's possible to explain the miracle in natural terms. However, the believer sees more deeply, and he realizes that God did it. The Ramban, for example, who's the person who really ran with this idea of two types of miracles, the Cecil B. DeMille type miracle, or you never heard of Cecil B. DeMille, the George Lucas Star Wars type miracle, versus, on the one hand, versus the sun comes up in the morning miracle, the plants grow miracle, the people get over a cold miracle, the man finds a way to cure some disease miracle, or the state of or the Jewish people continue to exist against all historical laws type miracle. You could explain it in some historical or natural terms, but at the end of the day, we believe that in fact it's a matter of faith, that God actually did a miracle. God intervened and made sure things would happen. We started talking about that yesterday. I mean, last week, we talked about the Ish. That Yosef goes to Shechem looking for his brothers, and had he not found them, he would have gone home. Right? But he finds the Ish. The Ish comes and says, no, I heard that they went to Dothan, which is over there. That action started all of Jewish history, because he found the brothers, and the brothers sold them to slavery, and then he went to Potiphar. And then there was a famine, and then the brothers came, and slowly but surely, the Shiabud Mitzrayim, the enslavement in Egypt happened, and then came Yitzias Mitzrayim, and that was the one bit of Torah that they had, the one promise that they had from Avraham Avinu, that was going to be the beginning of the transformation of the family of Avraham Avinu to a people. And then from there, from Sinai, they go from Egypt to go where? Where do they wander? They wander in the desert, and they end up where? Well, before that. They end up at Sinai. What happened? What did they do at Sinai? They get the Torah. So now they have their freedom, and they have their spiritual freedom as they committed themselves to God's constitution, and then they conquer the land. In other words, everything just sort of rolls from there. Everything rolled from that one moment that the Ish came. Rashi says it was a Malach Gavriel dressed up as a person. made to look like a person. But, you know, a person, you know, the guy from the New York Times came and said, well, you know, Joseph was wandering around and he bumped into this guy and who happened to hear the brother saying they're going to go from Shechem to Dothan. And I showed you on the map that that's like the west of Shechem. And that's it. You know, so what happened? It's a fuchs. In Hebrew you say a fuchs. It was a coincidence. But we don't believe in coincidences. That's what Nisr is all about. That what looks like an average, just a normal occurrence actually has purpose behind it. Actually, has God interfering in history. So we started talking about that. So that's the connection between the same thing as regard to Hanukkah. Hanukkah is in a certain way the story of a very successful guerrilla war by a small people led by a very determined general with very highly motivated troops and the general also knew how to make a deal. What do I mean? Yehuda Maccabee didn't just conquer the land because we didn't just conquer conquer the Greeks by brilliant guerrilla tactics. He also did it by very good shrewd diplomacy. He established a treaty with Rome. Rome was the big up and coming power in the world. And basically, Rome moved troops and forced the Greeks to move their troops out of Eretz Israel, which weakened their hold on Eretz Israel, so that they could. So it made it easier for Yehuda to win. Okay, so you could say, that's very nice. That's what happened, or no. It may very well, you know, it usually doesn't happen that the many get fall at the hands of the few. That's very unusual. In fact, it almost never happens. Hence, what do you see? It's God in history. The cruise of oil that burned for 8 days, okay? Who saw the miracle? We all know about it. Who saw it? Well, who gets to see the... where was the menorah? Right. Who gets to go into the Beit HaMikdash? No. The Kohanim go again. Only the Kohanim go in. So, you know, it's like a very small population of people who get to go see this thing. And that week, maybe there were 5, 10, I don't know, 20 people that saw it. Yet everybody believes it. It's also a Nes Nistar because it was hidden inside the Beit HaMikdash. All right. There were points of contact between the story of Yosef and the story of. And the story of Hanukkah. In any event, what I want to focus in on today is I want to talk about two specific issues. I want to talk about Joseph's dreams, and I want to talk about again this whole question of the promise of. That God made to Avraham Avinu, and its role in Jewish consciousness, Jewish awareness, as it sort of hovers over this entire story. All right, so take a look at the way things are light up. Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megori Aviv Beretz Canaan. So Yaakov lived in Canaan, where his fathers had lived. Eilat Toldot Yaakov. These are the generations of Yaakov, and we don't hear anybody else. We hear nothing about the other tribes. Yosef. Miracle child, according to the Steven Spielberg movie. Yosef ben Shvay Yisrael Shana, haya ro'eh techav batzon. He was a shepherd, he used to act with a shepherd with his brothers. Wasn't he used to watch over his brothers? He was shepherd together with his brothers. In other words, they were a group. They were a chevra, all 12 of them. V'hunar, he was a young guy, and generally he hung out with the sons of the Shvachot, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah that were added to, you know, when Rachel and Leah weren't having babies, so they gave their maidservants to Yaakov as a wife. And what happened was, according to the law then, if a woman didn't have children and she had a maid and she gave her if she gave the slave to her husband, so even though physically the slave woman gave birth to the children were counted as if they were the lady of the house's children. That's why, in both cases, when Bilhah and Zilpah's kid gave birth, the person who gave, who chose the names was, the people who chose the names were Leah and Rachel. Okay. Anyways, nevertheless, Yosef was not, he wasn't one of, he was one of, he hung with the guys, but he wasn't one of the guys. Vayavei Yosef et dibatam ra'ah el avihem, he was, you know, he used to rat on them. He used to tell on his brothers. He was a spoiled, bratty kid. V'Yisrael ahav et Yosef mikol banav, but Jacob or Israel loved Yosef more than all of his children, ki ben zkunim lo, because he was the youngest. Benjamin was the youngest, but younger Benjamin was a baby. And he made him a coat of many colors. This is a very serious business. You have to understand. I'm wearing a shirt of two colors, okay, with pasim. But in the ancient world, the technology to be able to make a multicolored coat, okay, especially if it was just a few thin strips, it was a very big deal. It was a fabulously expensive business. It's like, I don't know, what's an expensive piece of clothing today? Benetton, really?
No, Louis Vuitton.
Louis Vuitton. Okay, you're going to the top of the line. This is like stuff you can't really get. Okay, I don't know, cashmere. Is cashmere still a big deal? Maybe not. Okay, actually, yeah, llama wool. I don't know. Whatever you're going to make it out of. Okay, this was a very big deal. Vayuechav ki oto ahava eviyemi kol echav. Again, and his brethren as a group. His brothers, as a group, saw that their father loved him more than anybody else. They hated him. They couldn't talk. They couldn't even talk to him. But again, interestingly, okay, it's interesting. So what's it, the setup that you see is the brothers as a group are integrated as a whole, and Yosef stands apart. Okay. Vayachalom Yosef chalom. So and Joseph dreamed a dream. Vayaged leechav, and he told his brothers. Vayosif otos otsno oto, and they hated him even. They continued to hate him. But notice he wants to be part. He's sharing his dreams with his brothers. He wants in. He wants to be part of the group. But he's got this dream. I'll tell you my dream. You follow? In other words, he thinks, I think maybe innocently, that he if I tell my dreams, if I show my deepest secrets, then maybe you like me too. He wants to be liked. I'm not so sure how obnoxious he was. I think he might not have been all that aware, but okay. Vayomer Elihem, and he said to them, Shimun Achalom Sheazah Sher Chalamti. Listen to that, I had this great dream. Hine anachnu ma'almim alumim betocha sadeh. Vihine kama alumati v'gam nitzava. Vihine tusubena alamotechem vatishtachavena lalumati. He said, we're all binding sheaves in a field. Okay, you know what that is? When you cut down the wheat, okay, that you have to, when you gather up the wheat. Now, if you go through the states, okay, so you'll see that the wheat, all the grain is in these big like square bundles, okay. But in those days, what they would do is they would take a whole bunch of these things and they would bind them around the middle. Okay, and everybody cut down all the sheaves, and everybody made a bundle of grain. And what happened was mine got up, separated from you guys. Your sheaves surrounded mine and bowed down to mine. This did not make them happy. Okay, Vayomru lo echav, and his brothers tell him, Hamalok tim lochalenu, are you going to rule over us? In mashol tim sholbanu, are you going to make yourself a king over us? Or are you going to rule over us? Vayosifu ot shnooso al cholamotav alvara. Okay, so I want to zoom in on this dream. First of all, the Rav asked a very simple question. What's odd about this dream? Something very odd about this dream. What did Yaakov and his family do for a living? What were they constantly doing, and what was Joseph's job? What?
Shepherd. He was a shepherd.
He was a shepherd. Who's the enemy of the shepherd? No, the enemy of the shepherd is the farmer. The farmers and the shepherds hate each other. They've hated each other since time immemorial. because farmers are attached to their land. They live in the same place. They are attached to where they are. They put down deep roots. There is nothing more intimate than the relationship of a farmer and his land. Okay? He feels very, very, you know, deeply rooted. There you go. He's rooted. He's rooted in his land. Okay? He takes care of his land. He is solicitous of his land. He fertilizes the land. He does all this stuff. Okay? Now, what's about a shepherd? What does a shepherd do? How does a shepherd operate?
He herds the sheep.
Okay, and what does he do? What do the sheep do? Just walk around. You see, you can see sheep, flocks of sheep all over the place. What is sheep? What do they do? What's the role? What do you have to do with the sheep? Right now, yeah, okay. But in order to get them to grow the wool, what do you need? Food. What do they eat?
Grass.
Correct. So that you take them to graze is the word. Okay, that's why ro'etzon means you cause your sheep to graze. Okay, so you take them to where there's grass, and then what happens? Okay, and then what happens?
On the fields of the farmers.
Well, before we get to the fields of the farmers, then what happens?
Can you take them back?
Well, let me ask you a question. So they bring it to one part of the field and they eat the grass. Then what? They've eaten one day. Then what do you have to do?
You move on to the next.
Right. Shepherds are wanderers. They are rootless. They do not connect to any place. They're constantly looking all over the place for more grass to eat up, because when you exhaust the grass here, you're not going to have. If you eat all of the grass in the front yard today, there's not going to be any there tomorrow. There might not be any there for another few months. But the sheep have to eat every day. So you have to keep moving, and you got to keep grazing, and you got to keep going. And you leave. What do you leave in your wake? What do you leave behind? What does a shepherd leave behind? Come on. Right, empty grassless fields. They eat all the grass. Not only that, but sometimes they eat the grass so much that they eat up the roots too, and there's nothing. In other words, they can destroy fields also. So in other words, shepherds are rootless, not ruthless, but rootless. They wander, they're not connected, they destroy fields. Okay, since the sheep go from place to place, they don't really feel any connection to any one place. In fact, there's a general feeling, this is not just among Jews, but the Tanakh has it and Chazal have it, and it's all over the place, that in fact most shepherds are thieves, because you know they live off the land. They're sort of like not connected, nothing, everything. They live as they go. Okay, and so they're really the polar opposite. Of farmers. We know in human society, man started as a grazer or a hunter-gatherer, where you go around, you hunt and you take what you can find, and maybe domesticate some animals and they eat. And then the stage two is you settle down and you build yourself a society and you have farms and you stay in one place, and then more and more people live together, and then it becomes a village and a city and whatever the case might be. But there's constant tension between the farmer and the shepherd. It goes back to the beginning of mankind. Prove it to me.
With
Cain and Hevel. That's exactly right. This tension between farmers and shepherds goes back to Cain and Hevel. Cain was a farmer. Hevel was a Hevel was a shepherd. And Cain killed Hevel. So, but in any event, and to move from being a shepherd to being a farmer is a very big change. Shepherds are shepherds forever. Farmers are farmers forever. To shift from one to another is a very big adjustment. So, it's striking, the Rav points out, he's not the first one, but he points out that Joseph's dream had nothing to do with anything that they did. They weren't farmers.
They weren't farmers. They were shepherds. So how come he's having this dream about farmers?
So on different occasions the Rav interpreted the dream in two ways. One, in those drashot that I made, this is not really pshat, but in the drashot that I mentioned, they're called five drashot, five speeches. The Rav said that when he thinks about the shift from Eastern Europe, from the kind of traditional European kind of things that Jewish people did for a living, whether it was business, whether it was even cow punching sometimes, whatever the case might be. In Germany, Jews used to graze cattle. Whatever the case might be, he says the religious Zionists were sort of like Joseph. They sort of came to the other religious Jews and said, you know, we're going to have a time where we're not going to be doing what we're doing now. We're going to go back and we're going to be farmers again and working the land, and we'll have religious kibbutzim and all kinds of stuff. And they just hated it. They said, what are you crazy? What are you nuts? And Joseph knew. Joseph was a dreamer. Okay, he dreamt of another reality in which Jews would exist. More closely to the intent over here, there were two possibilities. What he's referring to? Why does this dream refer to agriculture? Why does this dream refer to farmers instead of to shepherds? Correct. Okay, that's a later aspect of it. Good. But first of all, I want to go back to. I want to go back to the story of Brit Ben Havtarim, the covenant that God made between, here it is, God made with Avraham Avinu at the very beginning. He takes him outside, and there's a whole thing. He cuts up the animals and so on and so forth. But the promise was this: Vayomer l'Avram, God says to Avram when he was asleep, Yadoa teda, you should really know for a fact, Kiger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem, because your descendants will be strangers in a land not theirs. Vavadum v'inuotam, and they will make them to slaves, and they will afflict them 400 shana, for 400 years. V'gamet agoyashir yavodu dananochi, but I will also pass judgment on the nation that they will serve. V'achrechen yetzu bilchush gadol, and after that they will go out in great with great wealth. V'ata avtavoel avotecha b'shalom. You will die in peace. You'll be a very old man when you die. And only four generations later will they come back. Because the Canaanites haven't messed up enough to justify taking away the land of Canaan from them. Okay. Now everybody knew somehow that the unnamed state nation where they were going to live was going to be enslaved was Egypt. Egypt was an agricultural society. On the contrary, we'll find out later that even though they had animals to eat, the Egyptians hated shepherds. They hated people who raised cattle. They had a very fertile, the Nile would overflow, and then they would have this incredibly fertile, the whole Egypt is huge place, is almost all desert. Anything that's worth doing there is all along the Nile, because the Nile overflows, it used to overflow its banks, and would bring up silt, and it was amazingly rich, fertile ground, and that's what they would do agriculture. And even though the Israelites were brought in initially to be shepherds and cowherds and stuff, nevertheless, eventually they did settle into an agricultural environment. Comes Yosef and he says, guys, we're going to be living in Egypt. And they didn't want to hear about it. So that's point number one here. Is Yosef's dream was to see another reality in which the Jews are going to have to hang together, even though the circumstances are going to be totally different than the way we live now. But group unity is going to be more important than anything else. Take a look. They were all working together. Nevertheless, he says, I think I'm going to have to be the leader. And that killed them. Understandably. But let me ask a question. If you think it's a problem, you know, Yosef had a real problem here. Because if he... What do you do if... I mean, maybe it wasn't the most diplomatic way to do it. But what do you do if you see that everybody's doing everything... As far as you're convinced that everybody's doing stuff wrong, and you know the way to do it. You know the solution. What do? Do you keep it to yourself? Or do you share it? Even though it means that you have to take charge.
Sure.
Even though it's going to make people angry?
Yeah.
Okay, well that's what Yosef did. And that's exactly what happened. It got everybody angry. It got them furious. Says, who are you to meaning, are you going to make yourself in charge? You're going to, like, you're going to take us over? Or you think that you have some kind of fancy, some extra kind of characteristics going to make you into some fancy leader? You know, who the hell do you think you are? What made you so great? Who made you, put you in charge? Especially when you consider the fact that notice, okay, that all the brothers, this is the Rebbe to point out, all the brothers were like, the brothers were like this group. So if you take a look later, every single tribe had their own characteristics. But here they're like this mob, you know, they're all in there together. As opposed to Yosef, who says, no, I see things differently. It's like, there's a lot, are you familiar with Monty Python? Have you ever heard of them? Okay, you haven't heard of them, so we'll leave it. Okay. So that was dream number one. So dream number one was, A, he dreams a reality that nobody ever saw. Number one. Number two, he says, you know, we're going to have to really be able to work together, because there were malumim, alumim, b'toch hasadeh. If we're in this new reality, we have to all work together, but I think I'm going to have to be the one to take the lead. And I didn't want to hear, they didn't want to hear about either the new reality, nor did they want to hear about the the fact that this spoiled kid who their father loved more than anybody else was going to be the one to do it. Okay, so that's that was the first dream. Vayachalom od chalom acher. Vayisaper oto le'achav. He told his brothers again. Vayomer, hinei chalamti chalom od. Here I... Oh, evening prayers in the mosque. Okay. V'hinei ha'shemesh v'hayareach v'achad asar kochavim mishtachavim li. The sun and the moon and 11 stars are bowing down to me. Meaning his father and his mother and the other 11 brothers. It's interesting. They didn't tell the father. They didn't tell Yaakov about the first dream. Okay? And he didn't tell Yaakov about the first dream. The second dream, he ran to tell. Now, it's also a little off, okay? But Yisaper Laviv, and told his father, Velechav, and his father rebuked him. So I said, what are you, nuts? Now, what do you think? If you go and tell your parents something, what do you usually tell them? Why do you usually tell your parents something? Why do you tell your parents anything, for that matter? Why? Why would a person tell their parents anything?
For advice.
Okay, one. What else? What other reason?
Complain.
Complain. Okay, you want to complain. All right, what else? But if you had a dream like this, why would you tell your... Hey, Ma, look at, I had this dream where you all bowed down to me. What do you think of that? Why would you tell them that kind of dream? You want them to be proud of you. Now here's Yosef. He you know, he's the darling, you know, he's the darling youngest child of de facto youngest child of Jacob. He's got this fancy coat. He, you know, Jacob loves him. So he goes running to Jacob saying, "Look at this dream I had. What do you think he expected?" Excitement and happy. Whoa, that just proves, you know, he's probably expected a response like, oh man, Joseph, that probably means that's just confirmation of all the hopes I've pinned on you, and yes, I'll be happy to come and bow down to you and you'll be the cat's pajamas. You'll be in the front page of the Times, and you'll be man of the year for Time Magazine and whatever else is going to happen. Okay? That's not how Yaakov responds. That's not how Yaakov responds. Vayigarbo aviv. He rebuked him. He yelled at him. He says, "What the hell is the matter with you? What kind of narcissistic egotist did I raise?" Vayomer lo, "Ma chalom hazeh asher chalamta?" What kind of dream is this? "Habo navo ani v'imcha v'achecha l'shtachavot l'cha arza." You honestly think that I and your mother, may she rest in peace, and your brothers are going to come and bow down to you all the way to the ground? "Vayikanu vo echav," and his brothers were jealous of him. "V'aviv shamar et davar." Okay? And his father sort of remembered. That was it. Interestingly, the brothers must have gotten some kind of satisfaction from the fact that the old man didn't back up Joseph automatically. Right? Because, you know, whoa! Daddy didn't give in to Joseph this time. You know, so maybe Joseph is also perfect, and maybe we can, you know, maybe he's not going to be always the favorite son. It's sort of like, he cut him down a couple of spots. Now, the fact that Jacob was not happy with Joseph was probably very disappointed, because Joseph had this real sense of mission. One thing comes out in the movie. Did you watch it? I asked you to watch it on YouTube. Joseph, Prince of Dreams, or King of Dreams, whatever it's called. So please do. Please do. It's on YouTube. It's in 10 separate parts because it's, it's YouTube. You have to have 12-minute segments or whatever. Joseph had the dreams that he really thought that he was something special, and he had this vision. He had this mission in life. And that he was really going to do something important. You know, he was really going to work with everybody, and he was going to change the world. He had this incredible sense of mission. And here his father didn't even believe him. In fact, his father couldn't understand the dreams either. That's very stunning. But Rav Soloveitchik says that it helps us understand the fact that Yaakov didn't understand what Joseph was doing helps to explain one of the oddest, most difficult aspects of the story of Yosef. And that is this. Yosef goes down to Egypt. Yosef goes down to Egypt. He goes. He has different. Has terrible time. Has terrible. Has terrible experiences. He gets put in jail, and finally, in next week's parsha, he ends up becoming the vice premier, the vizier, the second only to Pharaoh. Okay. Now you have to understand something. Egypt at the time ruled the land of Israel. The Egyptian Empire went, or Egyptian influence at least, went all the way up to Syria, and down into Ethiopia, and into Libya. Egypt wasn't just Egypt. Egypt was an empire. People in Canaan paid tribute, which is kind of a funny tax that you to Egypt. We have letters that they found in the city of Amarna of Egyptian governors and Egyptian representatives who went and were in contact with all the kings of all little cities of Canaan. All right? In other words, there was communication. There was a lot of communication. So let me ask you a question. Well, what's the big... Or again, even so, what's the moral issue? What's the really the biggest question? Once Joseph becomes the head honcho in Egypt, what's the question you have to ask?
Can I hear about it?
Why didn't Yaakov hear about it? All right, so he had an Egyptian name. But why didn't he send them a letter? Pick up the damn phone! Call your father! Call your mother! There's Skype, there's Viber, there's Tango. There's email, there's faxes. All right, so you don't have any of that. So you know what? You get a scribe, you have him write a letter, and you send him off. Why? He must have known that that Jacob was suffering. Because I'll point out that from the time that Yosef disappeared until the time that Yosef comes back, until the time he hears, that Yosef is alive, Yaakov is in constant mourning. I mean, what did he say? He says, after they sell him down to Egypt, they take his coat and they cut it up. Vayikur ketonet Yosef, and they take the coat of Joseph. Vayishchatu seir izim, and they slaughtered a goat. Vayitbelu et ketonet badam, and they dip the coat in blood. Vayishalchu et ketonet apasim, so they sent the coat of many colors. Vayaviu el aviem, and they brought it to their father. Vayomru zot matzanu, we found this on the road. Hakerna, take a look carefully. Haktonit binchahi imlo. Is this your son's coat or not? Vayakira. Jacob, you know, it was tailor made. It was, you know, better than Louis Vuitton. It was, you know, it was bought by you. You've got the best tailors to make this like to order. He immediately recognized it. Vayomik tonit bini. It is my son's coat. Chayara achalatu. It must be that a wild animal has eaten him. Tarof toraf Yosef. He has been cut, he has been eaten and torn into little bits, torn to pieces by some wild animal. Vayikra Yaakov simlotav, and Jacob tore his clothes. Vayasem sak bemotnav, and he put on sackcloth on his loins. Vayitabel al beno yamim rabim, and he mourned his son for many, many days. Vayakumul kobanav uvnotav lenachamo, and all of his sons and his daughters came to comfort him, and he couldn't get past it. He couldn't be comforted. He couldn't get past it. Ki ered el bini avel sheola. I will go to my dying day. I will go to my grave. I will go to my grave, mourning for my son. Vayevk oto aviv, and his father just cried and cried and cried. He went into, at the least, a profound depression. Okay? And he, for 20 years that he didn't hear from Joseph, he didn't come out of the depression. He only comes out of the depression in 2 weeks, when the brothers come and say, Joseph's alive, the Torah says, Vatechi Ruach Yaakov Avihem. And then his spirit was revived, and only then does God talk to him. God doesn't have anything to do with Jacob either for 20 years. Because a person can't be deeply depressed and be a Navi at the same time. Okay? So he must have known. So Joseph knew his father. He must have known he was depressed. He must have figured what happened. So Rav Soloveitchik suggests, as hard as this is, that Joseph realized that not only would the first dream in which the brothers bowed down to him have to come true, he would have to set up the circumstances wherein Jacob would also bow down to him. He would have to make his father come to accept the dream as well. And that's why he didn't contact him. That's a hard thing to think about. That sometimes when you have a mission to do, that it means taking a price on your family life. but realizing his dream, realizing the mission, when he's convinced that the dreams were true, actually required that he cut off his father too, because he had to force his father, maneuver his father, manipulate things into the situation which he knew ultimately would come, although he had no idea when, because it was God who made the brothers come at that time when there was a famine and so on and so forth. Okay. Two more comments I want to make. What kind of person was Yosef sold to? What was the guy's name? Remember? Take one chumash. It's Lamed Zion, Pasuk Lamed Vav. Potiphar. Potiphar Siris Paro. A little bit difficult. The Siris is a eunuch. So, but he had a wife. So exactly how that works is not clear. But he was Sar HaTabachim. So the question is, what does Sar HaTabachim mean? So according to Rashi, he was the head butcher. Okay? According to Ramban, he was the head executioner. Either way, Yosef wasn't really sold to to an upper class. You know, he was an officer of the court. Okay, the head cook is important, the head butcher is important, but you know, he wasn't the Secretary of State. He wasn't the minister of this of the Treasury. He wasn't the high priest. He wasn't all that. Excuse me. He wasn't top of the line, these guys, either way, okay? The head executioner is not somebody you want to live with. But they were people who exemplified or were responsible for expressing Egyptian morals and Egyptian tastes. What could be more typical? A way to, how do you get to know a company? How do you guys, there's, I don't know if they still do it. There are things called what exchange student is.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to live in a different country and you get to know the other country. So among the things you get to do is one of the things you have to do to learn another country is to learn about how they eat. You know, because by what they eat and how they dine and what their manners are, you get to know about their values and about their tastes and what their cultural orientation is. Okay. How you deal with the prison system, what you do with prisoners is also an indication of the values of the country. Okay, and the truth of the matter is that what was accomplished by Yosef living with Potiphar was that he was able to see the difference between the world that he came from and the world that he was in now. Egyptian society was the polar opposite of the household of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Egyptian society was ruthless and bloodthirsty and cruel and stratified socially, where the lower classes were downtrodden by the upper classes. Egyptian society was immoral. Okay, we'll come back to that in a minute. And it had to be that the contrast of the new society, the Rav points out, that the contrast between what he knew and what he was looking at must have just highlighted just what was incredible and positive about the world he had been forced to leave. What was Joni Mitchell used to say? You've heard of Joni Mitchell, no? The same? Well, the line is, you don't know what you got till it's gone. Okay? So he understood what he got. It's interesting, Chazal were very much aware of that. Okay, it's really striking. In Egyptian society, and this comes out of both historical documents as well as some very interesting novels,
There's a really wonderful novel about Egyptian society, which I really recommend, and it's actually quite accurate in many ways. There was a Finnish author whose name was Mika Waltari, Waltari. He wrote a book called The Egyptian, and if you ever find a copy, it's really worth reading. It's cool. Anyway, they were really, really morally relativist. You know, everybody slept with everybody else, and this and that. So look at what happens. What happens along those lines with Joseph? No? What happens with Joseph? How does Joseph end up in jail?
He steals.
No, he doesn't steal anything.
Well, he was framed.
No, he was, no, not for stealing. His Potiphar's wife tried to seduce Yosef. Yosef said, I can't bring myself to do it because I would be sinning against God and my master. Okay? So she cried rape and he got thrown in jail. He was framed for rape. Alright? But interestingly, Chazal say, now, principally, it's one of these very few places where God gets mentioned even third hand. Okay, so for example, he refuses to go with the wife. Vayomer Elishet Adonav, he said to his master's wife, Hein Adoni lo yadaiti ma babayit. He doesn't know anything what's going on in the house except for me. V'chol asher yishlo natan biadi. Nobody's greater in this house except me. Okay, and everything under my say so. Ki imotach basherat ishto, except for you because you're his wife. V'echese hara'a hagdola hazot. How could I do this terrible thing? V'chatati lelokim. And I would sin against God. Doesn't even mention the master. And in the end, so what's going on here? She's saying, come on, everybody's doing it. What's the big deal? And he's saying, no, I can't. It's a sin against God. This is Joseph is running up flat up against the value system that he grew up on versus the value system of Egypt, where everything went. Chazal say that when she tried to proposition him, he suddenly saw his father's face against, you know, in front of him, which is only another way of concretizing this idea that, you know, whoa, being in Egypt is making me realize who I am. Like it happens all the time to Israelis who are not that religious, they come to America, all of a sudden they become very, very Jewish because, you know, being up against a non-Jewish society highlights who you are and who you're not. Okay. Now, that's what I was going to say. And so as it was, this encounter between the morality and the values that were represented by Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov of honesty and rectitude and morality and belief in one God and responsibility to God. Among the Egyptians, yeah, give a couple of good steaks and he's happy, you know, just they leave me alone. Our God makes demands of us. That encounter was not just Joseph. Think about all the places in the Torah it says, you should do this because the Egyptians did that. You should love the stranger because you were strangers in Egypt. You should do this because you were in Egypt. This encounter with this world of free morals and free and relative truths and anything and corruption and so on was a formative moment for the Jewish people, and it comes up every line in Chumash. So the fact that so many mitzvahs are zechel l'tzias Mitzrayim is not just because we got out of there. In other words, if you leave someplace, you can leave because you don't want to be where you are, or you want to go where you're going, or you could be both. Zechel l'tzias Mitzrayim doesn't just mean because I wanted to get out, because I wanted to be over there. I wanted to be at Sinai. I wanted to get the Torah. Then I wanted to go to Israel because I didn't want to be there anymore. And that starts being, appreciated by Yosef. All right, I think we'll stop there. Enjoy.